Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. Y'all know I am crunchy mama to the max, but when it comes to seasonal allergies, I don't play. I can't afford to. Y'all, I've had the worst seasonal allergies my entire life. I have missed out on so much of the spring because I've had to stay inside while people are outside having fun. I've gone on these amazing retreats and literally just looked out the window watching people have the most amazing time. Because my allergies can't do it. I am straight up, I just can't do it. My eyes get itchy and red and watery. I can't keep makeup on. My nose drips. My throat gets clogged up. And I'm telling y'all, my face swells. It gets itchy. I really, really need support and help when it comes to seasonal allergies. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so that you can breathe better. I am pregnant right now, so I'm not able to take it. So please, you guys, if you have seasonal allergies, for my sake, go get some and experience what it's like to breathe a little bit. I've taken Claritin D for so much of my life. And when I'm not pregnant, I do take it. It's so, so helpful. Ready to live as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. What's up, people? Welcome back to another episode of Call Her Holy. I'm Laura Eldridge, and Nico is, of course, gallivanting around town. And I'm here with my friend Emily, not Utz. I know you as Emily Utz, but you are Emily Smith now.
Emily Smith.
For 11 months.
11 months. Mark it down.
Amazing. Okay, so y'all, Emily and I were in like a whole former world together. She was one of the first people who, when I started going to The Porch, our young adults ministry here in Dallas, she was this leader. I mean, it was like, put this girl on a pedestal. Oh, she gosh. Is like opening up her Bible. And I'm like, how do I be Emily Utz?
Oh my gosh, you're funny. The Porch days, good days.
Those were some good days. We had some fun. Do you remember when we ran into each other on the plane on the way back to North Carolina?
From
Dallas, like to travel for Christmas. So Emily was my other fellow North Carolinian in Texas. And we randomly were on the same flight one time. And I remember this Mormon kid. Do you remember the Mormon kid?
Oh, yeah.
So this Mormon kid is like so hard trying to convert me to Mormonism.
Yes.
And I'm like, honestly, I respect it, bro, because you're more passionate than most Christians are.
Totally.
And so anyways, he was on our flight there and our flight back, and I still have his Book of Mormon that he gave me.
And the little kid that sat between us.
Oh,
like a
yeah.
little 8-year-old that you asked if he liked to read and does he ever read his Bible. And
oh, yeah.
Remember that kid?
No, I forgot about that kid.
He was much younger, but we gave it a shot. He was pretty shy. I think his parents had given him very strict instructions. Do not talk to strangers on planes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm starting to remember that now.
Yeah.
Just us sharing the gospel with children.
Crying.
All around the world. No, that was a whole nother world. Em, how you doing?
You know, I'm great, but I'm also in a season of my life where it's really easy to say I'm great.
Okay.
So, I mean, I've been married for 11 months. That's a really fun time. And so it's very easy to say today, I'm great. Have I always been great? No. But today I'm great.
That's good. Which is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about like all of the season leading up to now.
Let's talk about it.
Because you are, tell us how old you are.
I am 40.
And you are pregnant.
I'm pregnant.
Which,
with
y'all,
my first
I didn't even.
Baby.
First baby. I didn't even know until she walked in today. And I'm like, wait, you're pregnant?
Yes. You're with me. I still kind of can't believe it. Pregnant and 40, which feels like a documentary.
It's amazing. A lot of the ladies in my birth class were 40.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, it's the new thing.
Yeah, it is.
I'm a big fan.
It kind of is. A lot of people are getting married later in life and then want a season, be like just with their significant other, you know?
Yep. I love that idea. We didn't get much time, but. We actually didn't get any time. We also have a daughter that's 2 that we adopted. So I can tell you more about that. But so we've had no time of just us being married and then got pregnant very quickly. So it's been a wild ride.
I love it. Okay, we're going to jump into your story. But first, girls, I'm going to tell you why Emily is here. she has been on a different path than probably you would say you wanted in
life. Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
And so she's gone through all the ups and downs and highs and lows of, God, where are you? Why is my life not turning out the way that I want it to? And then why I personally was like, we have to have Emily on the podcast. I've like pushed other girls to you, like in your DMs and in texts, because I'm like, you need to follow Emily's example. She made a decision at some point in her life to foster babies while she was still single. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. But you guys, this girl has been so faithful and has been such an example that I know you're going to love hearing from her. So let's dive in. Tell us a little bit of your story, how you came to know Jesus, all that.
Okay, well, I'll make it bullet pointed here. But so I'm 40. I heard the gospel through Young Life when I was 18. And then I always say I put it on pause for the next 10 years. So from 18 to 28, did not know what to do with the gospel that I had heard and understood. I had been raised as a child in the Catholic Church and had lots of confusion around God and scripture. At 18, heard the gospel clearly articulated and was all in. Had no clue how to live as a believer. So fell right back into all my sin patterns until I was 28. At 28, I got a job offer in Dallas and I moved from North Carolina to Dallas. Sight unseen, very quickly. Looking back, that was the Lord's hand on my life saying, girl, we got to get serious about this thing. And quickly plugged into Watermark, quickly plugged into The Porch, met friends like you, and life just really kind of started to rock and roll. First time I'd been around believers and where I started to learn my Bible, be taught, serve in the church, understand God, study His Word, and live my life for Him. So things started looking drastically different at 28. All along there, one of my biggest prayers, which maybe is the case for lots of you guys listening, is I wanted to be married. I wanted a family. I was from North Carolina. Everyone in my family is married. Aunts, uncles, grandparents. You just got married and you had biological children and had a family. And so I prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed well into my 30s that that would be my story. And it was not becoming my story. I rarely was getting asked out on dates, which we can talk through all the pain of that and the reasons I chalked that up to. And yeah, somewhere along maybe mid to late 30s, I had to tell the Lord, hey, I'm devastated that I don't have a husband, and I'm even more devastated that I don't have children. And eventually got to, I'm going to open my heart to foster care. So
how did the idea of foster care even like cross your mind?
Yeah, great question. I, in probably a moment of frustration, if I'm putting it honestly,
let's talk.
All right, I'm done with men. I'm not getting married. I get it. I will put that aside. And it is hurtful and painful, but I will lay that down as bad as I don't want to. But it's just like nothing in my life is pointing towards that's headed your way or you're getting close. I could not lay down motherhood. And the Lord used that moment of desperation to go, hey, you got to look at other options. Does that mean foster care? Does that mean adoption? Does that mean getting a sperm donor? I mean, it's just like all these other options that I just never even wanted to talk about or consider or think about were all of a sudden on my table.
So, okay. You, how old were you at that point?
Probably 36.
You're 36. A lot of people ask me like, hey, when do I give up? And I don't know that that's the right question to ask as far as like there's a time to give up hope. But I think they're really asking like, when is the time that I just accept the reality of like, hey, I might not ever get married, or I think they just want to know like, hey, I'm never getting married.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So would you say that you entertaining foster was your way of saying I'm giving up at this point?
Or- it absolutely was me giving up. Yes. I mean, just to be, I would like to say no to that, but it was me giving up. More so, it was me saying, I'm going to shift my perspective. So if I had, I wish this was like journaled out somewhere. It's not that clean. The story would be cooler if it was, but it was, God, I want a husband and I want children. When I look at your word, I see things that tell me those are good. Children are a blessing.
Yeah.
Man is not meant to be alone. Marriage is a gift. Men are leaders of the home. And I'm like, so wait, why am I asking for these good things that you say are good? And you're going, absolutely not. And I also was saying to the Lord, I want a family. So that means I want to get married and then I want to get pregnant and I want to have biological children. Please answer my prayer. And something shifted where I said somewhere along the way, I want a family. How can we get there? And I think the Lord said in that moment, I'm so glad you asked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was a perspective shift.
I want a family. How can we get there? And that wasn't, because I think a lot of people are nervous to take another step like that because it feels like, what is taking control? They'll ask this about dating apps and things like that. Like, where am I taking control versus just like, no, that might be a great next step that God is allowed and maybe even invited me into. I know it's not the same as like sure. Thinking of foster, but like, did you ever feel that like, hey, what's the difference? Like if somebody was asking you, like, what's the difference in me taking control and God saying, hey, I'm just carving out a different path, like discerning that.
The truth is you probably are taking control. Mm-hmm. You're a woman with a deep desire for something that is sweet and intense and very, very biblical. And I think that's another thing I realized is that God's okay with that. And he will walk you gracefully through the moments that you're taking control. And he will gently reveal to you, hey, pipe down. Mm. Let me help remove that from your life. That was not the plan.
Mm.
Online dating was great for you a year ago. It has become sin for you this year.
Mm.
And he's okay with you making mistakes. And so maybe you shouldn't have kissed the guy on the first date. Maybe you shouldn't have gone on the date. Maybe you shouldn't have logged on to the dating app. Maybe you shouldn't have circled back with the ex-boyfriend. That is not why God's withholding marriage. I played that game for way too long.
Wow, that's really good. So were there things in your life that you're like, no, this is 100% the reason that I'm not married?
Oh, 1,000%.
What are some of those things just to like help the girls feel like, oh, me too?
Yeah. Well, bitter Betty over here, me, I just decided that it was because of the way I looked. I was so mad at every man that claimed to know Jesus that dated what I thought was the standard of beauty. Mm. If she was skinny and beautiful and blonde like you, Laura, I was mad.
You're like, I want you dead.
And that just wasn't true. It was frustrating. I rolled my eyes a lot. And specifically at pastors, like some of our male pastors and friends are married to what I consider just beautiful, gorgeous women that could be on the front of magazines. And I didn't look like that.
Mm.
And yeah, I blamed a lot of it on that. If only I looked different. And truth be told, I don't look different. I'm my husband's standard of beauty today. Mm. That was a huge jump for me. And truth be told, I never got to the point in my singleness where I believed that.
Mm.
On the other side of marriage, I have believed it, but I never got there.
Yeah. Would you say that's wrong for somebody to like never get there?
Not necessarily wrong. I think you got to be honest about it. You got to let people speak into it.
Yeah, that's right. So I wasn't trying to trap you, but I'm with you too. Like, I think we feel scared to like be honest. You know, sometimes we're scared to just like admit that because it makes us seem less faithful or whatever. And God's like, you're not fooling me.
Absolutely.
Like, just tell me how you feel. Like, put it out. Like Psalm 62 says, pour your heart out before the Lord. I'm your rock and I'm your refuge. I'm your God. I love you. Pour your heart out before me.
Yeah. And I felt like I had a lot of data too. A lot of data to back up the lies I believed or the things I struggled with.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that for a second because I think there is kind of a difference. And that's one thing like we really try to do here on this podcast is like, we want to shoot you straight. Like we want to help you know, like, this might actually be a cultural reality that you're living in.
Mm-hmm.
You're not crazy for thinking that, you know, for thinking that guys are going for the hot girls or that they're overlooking you for X, Y, and Z reason. Like, you don't just have to tell yourself that that's a lie, but partnered with it is a lie that God can't do anything about that. Or that because of that, you'll never get what you want.
Right. Or that you have to fix it before you get there. That there's a checklist. So like I said, I never got to the point where I was ready to say, hey, in my still current singleness, I believe that men truly date women for their heart for the Lord. I never got there. And that was not why the Lord was not bringing me a spouse, is because I was still messed up in that area, or because I still struggled with body image and thought that my body defined me and I needed to be more beautiful by some standard I had set forth. He was not mad at me in withholding marriage because I was still immature in those areas. And I felt very, very pressured to get that stuff right. Like, that's the mark of a believer. The Lord's not going to let you get married and enter into a marriage with those thoughts that are not right and not of him. I felt a ton of pressure to get those things right, to get to a place of contentment, to say things like, my perspective has completely shifted. I've done a complete 180. There was a lot of areas I never did a 180 and maybe still haven't. And so perfection does not earn you marriage. in any way, or a family, or whatever the thing is you're praying for.
Okay, that's really good, Emily. You said perfection doesn't get you marriage. Because what I heard is like, okay, you had this thing of like, hey, my body is the reason I'm not getting married, or my physical appearance is the reason I'm not getting married. And one, you're literally stunning. I always thought you were so gorgeous.
You're so sweet.
But it's like two areas of almost bargaining with God, which I know you're going to talk about in a minute. Or feeling like, okay, I either need to fix my body or fix my heart. And mm-hmm. both things are focused on you fixing something.
Exactly.
And thinking that's what's going to get you to a spot where God's like, okay, now you deserve it.
Right.
And that's like so crazy because it's just not how God works at all.
Yeah. And on the flip side, now that I am on the other side of marriage, which is just an easier place to talk from, I can look back with clarity and say, the Lord was waiting on my heart to shift and for me to have a heart posture that was more of, Lord, I want something that is a good gift from you, a family, including a husband and children. And how are we going to get there? And he was delighted in that heart posture and could not wait to meet me there. Mm. And that was more of what he did want for me. He didn't care what size my jeans were, and he didn't care how I dressed and how I looked and what kind of haircut I had. I cared. So I projected that's what he cared about.
Mm, that's really good. I think there are a lot of girls in so many areas of life. And I remember I did this too, like thinking, like, I love that you just said projecting that on God. We think because we see this area, we forget that God looks at us and sees Jesus. Okay, I have to say this because I'll never forget this, Emily. You and I were sitting on another plane. Why do all of our moments happen on planes? You had invited me to go to Colorado with you guys. I just remember this.
Yeah.
And it was so sweet. I had just gotten broken up with, and I was a hot mess. Oh my goodness, I was a hot mess. So we're at this trip in Colorado, and so many stories there. But then we're on the way back, and I remember just like dumping. Do you remember this?
Oh, yes.
I just remember dumping. Like, probably, it was probably so exhausting. I'm telling you all these things. And
you were heartbroken.
I was so heartbroken. Yeah, that's the thing. Thanks for being patient. That's really sweet.
You were crying on the plane. And oh, yeah, it was so sad.
Didn't care who saw me. Yeah, it was probably so sad. So anyways, I'm sharing my heart with you. There we go. It's a better way to say it. And I just remember you looking at me and being like, Laura, I don't have anything wise to tell you, but I do know that God doesn't talk to us like that.
Right.
And I think I've said that here on the, I've quoted you so many times on that, Emily. I will never forget it because I'm like, oh my gosh. And then from there, I remember looking up Isaiah 53, where it talks about the punishment for sin. Like, there is no punishment left for sin. And I realized like my inner dialogue was all punishment. And even like the way, like, you're not good enough, you're all these things, if you could just be more content, if you could just get it together, if you just wouldn't have done these things, your life would look different. If you, whatever, it was just like punishment and for things that weren't even sin. If like, there's not even punishment left for sin because Jesus took it. There's definitely not punishment for these things that aren't sin. Like, there's just none of that left. And I just, that was a huge pivotal moment for me, realizing like, okay, my inner dialogue and the way that I feel like God relates to me is not, it's not accurate.
Yeah.
You know?
And while we do that and punish ourselves and push ourselves further into that pit of punishment, what we're also subconsciously doing is we're elevating others. We're elevating thinking that the girls around us that are getting some things that we wish we had, that they're being rewarded. And so not only was I becoming a worse single person, I was bad at it, I was also becoming a worse friend. And so that was a big snowball effect too, of just, you are projecting so much punishment onto yourself from the Lord that he never intended for you. And you are elevating women and thinking that they're doing something extraordinarily right that you're not doing, and that they're getting this great grand reward. And neither are true.
Wow.
So spawns jealousy, spawns discontentment, spawns comparison. And then you find yourself in just a heap of sin. And I vividly remember feeling that way, which ultimately I had a conversation with my childhood best friend. We grew up in North Carolina. We both live in Dallas. So she has had a very intimate look into my life. And she said to me just the other day, you only saw the world through a perspective of singleness while you were single.
Wow.
You saw every single detail of life, every event, every conversation, every interaction through the lens of singleness, because it was an idol. And she's right. I hated hearing it, But that is the summary of what 20 years of singleness did, was it just, I got so focused in on it and stopped fighting it.
Oh, it's so interesting to hear, because I remember feeling pieces of that too. And I can imagine how it like grows and grows and grows, because you got married when you were 39.
39.
I got married when I was 29. And to me, that felt like so long, and the heartbreak and everything leading up to that. But like having to change friend groups and like start over with community and all those things, it's like I loved my married friends, but I needed other people in my life stage. Yep. But you uniquely have like had 10 more years of that wrestle and that struggle and feeling the whole biological pressure and all that stuff. But one thing that's so interesting about what you just said is that like that's how girls with an eating disorder view the world. Mm. Like with an eating disorder, everything is food. Mm. Everything is body image. You look at another girl and you think, oh, she's skinnier because she worked out harder than I did and didn't, you know, eat as much, or whatever the view is. But it's so crazy to like think through that perspective of like, as we were single and struggling so hard and viewing the world through this lens, that's kind of like when you put it next to an eating disorder, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Who wants to be that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a hard, hard place to live. And I did calculate it, Laura, because I thought about it on my drive over here. I got married at 39. I had my first conversation about getting married with the guy I was dating in college at 19. So when I say I struggled with singleness for 20 years, that is an accurate count, an accurate amount of years, where it's not like I was 8 years old. Like I was 19. We talked about getting married. And from 19 to 39, I had to fight it, battle it, wonder. And when I say perspective, like I wasn't just sad on Christmas Eve because I didn't have a spouse to sit in front of the fire with when my whole family was around with, you know, their spouse holding hands, being all cute on Christmas. I was sad on a rainy Wednesday because I thought it was unfair for it to be raining and I had to go get gas because I was single. Mm-hmm. And I would think, gosh, it'd be nice to have a husband to go fill up my car with gas in the rain. Mm-hmm. Like it was all the time. Mm-hmm. I saw every little detail through the lens of, it is so unfair to be single. And those were the hard moments where I just, like I said, I lost the battle in those moments. And that's where my sweet friend just reminded me, you got to a point where you couldn't get out of it.
What would you say to that girl, like who's probably, you know, similarly there?
Oh, man. I would say, I see you. I think a lot of people see you. And the truth of the reality is that is a hard place to be. And you don't know how long you're going to have to fight this battle.
Yeah.
And it's okay to say, hey, I'm not content. I'm not okay with it. A rainy Wednesday is a hard day to be single. And so is Christmas Eve. And so is when you have to go to your friend's wedding and be a bridesmaid for the 56th time. And so is going to family events by yourself. And so is going to a baby shower. I mean, all those things are hard. And I would just say that it's okay to say they're hard. And man, find you a friend that's going to sit in that with you and not correct it. Because gosh, do y'all all just roll your eyes every time someone tries to give you a Band-Aid or a piece of scripture?
Tell you just trust God.
Trust God. Be content.
Oh my gosh. It's
singleness is a gift. Oh man. My eyes could have fallen out of my head. I rolled them so hard.
It's like those things are true, but honestly, like sometimes you just need to let the person like get there on their own and just sit in their grief.
Yeah.
Like it's a very real suffering, and I think it can minimize the suffering.
Absolutely. I got a text from a friend today that I was in a community group with for maybe 5 or 6 years. She's on the back end of 39, single, would love to be married. And she sent me a text about a guy she hung out with yesterday. And she said, I just realized after hanging out with him that I get a say. And I think somewhere along my 39 years, I have said, hey, you need to take what you can get.
Oh, wow.
And if he pays you attention, you pay him attention. And he's a great catch. And she said yesterday, at 39 and a half years old, that she realized, hey, I don't have to take what I can get. I am valuable and worthy. And here's the deal. I'm not into him. Wow. And I wrote her back and said, I'm so proud of you. This is the healthiest text I've gotten all month. And only you could have gotten there. We could have sat in community. We could have had a phone call. We could have gone to dinner and coffee. And I could have tried to beat that truth into her head unsuccessfully. She got there. It took 39 years.
Wow.
And so I'm just, those are the moments of wins. And that just is a woman that's like, hey, I'm hurting. I've lost hope, but I'm not giving up on the Lord.
Wow.
I'll still give him a lane always to speak in. And he does.
Yeah. This is the kind of stuff that I think that there is a gap in the church where, no fault of the church, just like this is created as we've gotten older and marriage has been pushed. Some of it's a societal thing. Mm-hmm. There's so many reasons. But one thing is like what I heard in there is dignity. Like for her own dignity, she has value. She's like, okay, wait a second. I actually believe that God has given me a choice that I've forgotten. Like instead of just, I have to take what I can get, you know, God's right. just giving me the scraps or whatever. And I hate calling somebody else scraps, but we kind of can think of that where it's like, hey, I'm not interested in this person. I'm not, whether it's like a character thing or whether it's like, I feel like I want to pull my hair out when I'm talking to him, you know what I mean? But he's my only option. I think a lot of girls yes. stay in relationships for a really long time because they think that that's going to be their only option or their only chance of getting married. And like, I've gotten to say this a lot to girls in those conversations of, you would rather be single and lonely than married and lonely. Like if this guy is not walking with the Lord, not leading you, or you just straight up, like, I just don't enjoy you. Like you don't have to marry him.
Right. Right. My husband and I laugh about this. He thinks this is so crazy, but I told him I was settled that I was going to marry a man with good character, but most likely not attracted to. Mm. And I went on dates with people in that scenario. I am 0% attracted to you. Maybe that will grow, but you are a man of good character, so I'm in. And we laugh about it now because he's like, is that me? Is that me?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm wildly attracted to you. I just had hung that up. Mm. I knew I couldn't get both. And so I think maybe for people listening to this, maybe that's a good place to start, is just asking yourself that question, like, where are you bargaining with God? Where are you telling him, hey, I promise you, I will do this if you will bring me this. Mm. I promise you, I will be a really good wife as long as he has good character. And by the way, I'm okay with not even being attracted to him. Like, where have you somehow said things like that? Or, hey, I've been overweight my whole life. I get it. That's my struggle. I'm okay with it. Just make one man attracted to me and I'll be really faithful. Like, bargaining with the Lord was just such a big thing for me. And you got to be straight about it.
Yeah, it's like bargaining. And I want to talk about bargaining more because you set an example before we started recording that I was like, oh my gosh, that is literally so good.
Yes, yes.
But it's bartering. But there's also something in there about God's character. And I think there's a fine line to walk here that I'll just address, because some of it is like, girls and guys alike can have unrealistic expectations of like, he's going to walk in and sparks are going to fly and I'll have this sign from above that he's the one and I'll never be able to get enough of him. And like, this is how it's going to be. And for some people it is like, hey, I wasn't attracted to him and I didn't want to give him a chance. And on the third date, something changed.
Yep.
You know? And so that is some people's stories as well. Something changed and now they're like, oh my gosh, this guy hung the moon.
Right. Well, even you saying that, Laura, you just said that is someone's story. And I think that's probably where I want to be the most careful in sharing my story. And one of the areas where I did maybe the biggest eye rolls was, there's not a formula to follow. I can't say anything. You can't say anything. No woman, no pastor, no church can say anything that is going to give you a formula that is the secret key to unlock all your wildest dreams. That just doesn't exist. I'm happy to share my story with you. I love my story. It's not your story. So don't hear, go foster a kid and then you'll get married. Yeah. That's what happened in my life. That is not how God works. That is not God's magic potion for women that are still single in their 30s. In the same way, it's not serve at your church, lead your Bible study, you know, rub shoulders with godly men in serving opportunities. That is not the secret potion to getting what you want. It's just not. It's 100% not the way God works. Just like I told you on that plane, that's not the way God talks to us. And that's not what he wants from us. And those bargaining tools just straight up don't work. So I think you got to, number one, be super honest about, all right, where are you playing that game?
That's really good. That's so good.
I mean, am I right? Did you do that?
Oh, yeah, I totally did. I totally did. And it's so funny because one of the things we were talking about before, I really resonated with, because you think like, God, if you'll just give me a husband, like, I don't care about X, Y, and Z. And yes. I want you to actually talk about this because you mentioned the whole like.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the other day, I have been married for less than a year, but I heard myself saying the prayers that I had said when I was single, and I had bargained with God and said, I had heard all these women around me that were married complaining, for lack of a better term, about two major things. One is in-laws, specifically mother-in-laws, and two is money, finances, status of wealth. And I told the Lord, hey, I don't care. You can give me the most difficult mother-in-law in the world. You can give me the sweetest mother-in-law in the world. Whatever mother-in-law you give me, I will be so faithful and I will love her no matter what. And I do love my mother-in-law, but I just remember hearing myself say, Lord, I promise you that. Let's bargain that. I'll put that on the table. In the same way I went through money-wise and heard a bunch of married people say how their husband's student loans or their wife's student loans were just a huge area of conflict in their marriage. And I bargained with the Lord and I said, hey, if you will bring me marriage, I don't care what his financial, if he's in debt, yeah, I will gladly take his debt.
Yeah.
If he has big student loans, yeah. I will love them. I will pay them happily with a joyful heart.
Yeah.
Just to be honest, I don't. Like, you don't we love do them? Have student loans. I don't love them. But I know that I told the Lord I would. And so even today, real talk, real time, I'm like, man, I told the Lord I would be really cool about this. And I don't feel cool about
I'm
it.
I'm not cool.
Yeah. And so that's just a real life example of where I told the Lord, hey, if you give me this, I promise I'll be cool with it.
It is so funny how often we do that. Like, we bargain with God. We're like, yeah, if this, then I'll be this model student. And God's like, I don't need you to be, you know, like you're going to have struggles then just the same way that you have struggles now. And that's not what I'm like. I like that you used the word magic potion earlier, because I think we are looking for what's the magic potion. Yes. And I think it's impossible to do anything with 100% pure motives. So I think like a lot of the things that we do, it's like, okay, and I'm doing this because there's a chance that I might find my husband because of this, because that worked out for somebody else. And
right.
And it's impossible to just not do that at all, you know, somewhere deep inside of you.
And the rub is that you kind of know what those things are. Is it like, oh, I should take a new job. I should be the girl that moves to a new city. That's where so many girls met their husband. I should be the girl that does XYZ. I should change churches. I should change cities. I should change jobs. I should hang out with a different group of people. I should become involved with this organization. That's where all the single people gather. And the truth is, go do all those things. But got to be real.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for. Say, hey, I am moving to a new city because I want to meet a spouse and I think that he might be in that city. And let your friends that love you dearly be like, you need to chill.
Yeah.
That's just not true. I mean, it might be. And if you want to move to that city for good reasons, then great. But don't move there hoping to find a husband.
Totally. Or they could be like, you know what? You're right. Like, you should, because there are no guys here. You know,
yeah.
there just aren't.
Yeah.
You live in a community of 40-year-olds. And I don't know.
But hey, that 40-year-old might know another 40-year-old that knows true. A 30-year-old.
That's true. Hey, let's talk about the age gap for a second.
Oh, okay. Here we go. This is as bluntly as I can put it.
Let me tell you this first. This baffles me, because every single week on my Q&A, I do an AMA Monday, mm-hmm. Ask Me Anything Monday. And every single week, somebody asks about the age gap. Like, is it okay? And it's sometimes it's guys, sometimes it's girls, but like, is it okay to have a big age gap? I think last week I had like 10 people ask that question.
Oh my gosh. Easy, quick. Yes. It's okay to have an age gap.
to me, that's what I feel. I'm like, I'm not answering this again, because the answer is just yes, period. Yeah. But you can ask if you want to. So now give us like let's talk about it for a second.
Well, before I give you the numbers, when 9/11 happened, Preston was in fifth grade in Louisiana.
Preston's your husband.
Preston's my husband. When 9/11 happened, Emily, me, I was a freshman at the University of Tennessee. So there's our age gap. And that is the moment that we feel the farthest apart. He's 33, I'm 40. It's no big deal. It never comes up. It's a non-issue.
It's a non-issue.
But when we think about 9/11, that is funny.
That is so funny. Did you ever feel, and I know the answer to this question, but I'm loading you, setting you up. Did you ever feel like, hey, because of my age, a guy who wants to have kids is not going to marry me?
Oh my gosh, yes. And, oh, my sweet guy friends, I love them dearly. I have so many dear guy friends that are single in Dallas in their 30s. And when you're single in your 30s, you hang out with other people that are single in their 30s. They will straight up and have straight up said, I would never date a girl over 32. Because I want to have kids. And I remember sitting at lake houses and parties and get-togethers where they would openly say things like that. And I remember
to a group of like 35, 36-year-old.
It wasn't like I heard them. They were talking to me
yeah.
and other people. And my heart would feel shattered in that moment and just hurt on a whole nother level. But it's just not true. And I used to be sad for me because I thought, oh, that's so devastating that guys don't want to date me because I'm older and they assume I can't have biological kids. And man, maybe they're right. And now I'm just more sad for them mm-hmm. of like, man, there's just some amazing women. And I hate that a number, a birth certificate, birthday is like disqualifying them. That's yeah. that's a shame for you.
Yeah.
Your pool could be so much better.
Yeah.
But that's their thing. You know, and that's okay. That's their thing. That's their hang up. And the Lord can work on that too.
That's good. And here you are 40 with a healthy baby.
Yes. Wild.
33 weeks pregnant.
33 weeks pregnant, healthy. And it's, yes. And I'm 40 and it's more than I could have imagined. But this is where you have to remember that God's the creator of the universe, not my 36-year-old single friends in Dallas. And so why did I give them a bigger microphone than I gave the Lord? Like I listened to them. They hurt me and they encourage me some days more than my creator and my king. That's weird.
Yeah.
That is weird that I heard those voices louder.
Wow.
Why did I do that?
Wow. That's so good. So let's talk about really quick foster, because you started when you were 36 thinking about that, you said?
Yep. Thinking about it, training. It takes a long time. And yeah, I just told the Lord, hey, I've got some margin in my life. I can grieve the wife and spouse thing. I cannot grieve the motherhood thing. And so went through the training and honestly had to count the cost. And the cost for me was, man, I already kind of feel undateable. I don't get asked out a ton. There's not a line of men at my front door asking to marry me or date me. And if I'm not already undesirable, this is really going to be the nail in the coffin.
Mm.
You know, now I have a newborn kid in foster care. What that's going to entail, I don't know. And so I knew that was like really going to kill the dating game that was already maybe on life support. And but yeah, I did. I said yes to it and it felt very, very right. I will say in the most churchy way I can say, one of the biggest elements to saying yes to that was having some women around me that every moment I got scared and pulled out of it, they said, hey, you have heard from the Lord. Move forward.
Mm.
Say yes, keep going, go to the next class, take the next step, get the background check, sign up, call them back, open up your home. Like, this is clear. And there was multiple times where I stopped and hit pause and had sweet friends that were reminding me, hey, keep going. This is a yes.
Wow.
So that was important. It was definitely not a by myself thing. And so said yes. October of 2020 was the first day they dropped a little 4-day-old newborn baby off at my house on a Friday night, straight from the hospital. And she made me a mom that day.
Wow.
Yeah. I celebrated Mother's Day for the first time in May of 2021 with her in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I felt alive.
Wow.
It was beautiful and awesome. And I guess I was a single foster mom. And it was the most perfect version of motherhood that I could have ever asked for.
Wow.
It felt out of order. It felt like plan B. And the Lord corrected all that so quickly.
Wow.
And showed me that it was by no means plan B and it was not an imperfect version of motherhood. It was always what he had. So,
wow.
Yeah.
It's like for God, he's like, no, this was plan A all along. It just wasn't your plan A. It
Correct.
Was my plan A. And my plans are so much better. Isaiah 55. We know that his thoughts are higher, that his ways are higher.
Yeah. I'll share something I've been stuck on lately. So Ephesians 2:10 says we are created like we're God's workmanship. So we can just stop there and I just have to realize he knows me, he made me, and I mean knows me, like gets me in and out, like knows how I'm going to think, perceive, decide things. And later on in the verse, especially in the ESV, I think is it says the word beforehand. He created works for you beforehand,
mm-hmm.
which I love the version that says beforehand. So the Lord always saw me as a foster mom. He saw two newborn little baby girls. They were both going to be born in October, one in 2020, one in 2021. He always saw me as their mom. Mm.
Like that was your good work. So like
that he went before.
Yeah.
And now we get back to the beginning of the verse. I was created. I am his handiwork. And because of that, he knows me and he knew I got to keep my girl Emily open to that. I got to keep her eyes on foster care. if I give her a spouse, that will distract her.
Wow.
She won't see it. And so as crazy as that sounds, it was like he loved me enough to know if she's married, she's going to be like biological kid girl. And I have something, I've gone before her and I have foster care for her. And so although withholding a spouse feels unloving and she's so sad and it hurts my heart, my father's heart, to see her sad and waiting and doubting my goodness, I have to withhold that from her to keep her eyes on what I have for her.
Wow.
And that's how I see it playing out. And it did play out. And I hate this. There's another story that's very similar. I hate that the example is again around children, but I have a friend, same exact scenario, I think, that I'm like watching play out in real life right now. She got married, got pregnant with a biological child, and then immediately was ready to grow her family and try for baby number two. It just did not happen. Her womb closed for years and years and years. And so her and her husband ended up adopting. The minute they adopted, guess what? Womb opened right back up. And it was like the Lord knew, I have to withhold this second pregnancy because I have a child and I need her to fix her eyes on adoption. And a second pregnancy is going to distract her from that. And so I've actually been praying with my community group of single women that I walked with for 10 years. And I don't know if it's right, but it's just kind of where my thoughts are right now of going, hey, is there something that's out of order? Like, have you always thought that motherhood came after marriage? Because I did. And I was never open to any other order of events. Marriage happens and then you become a mom. Not for me. I just had to put that on the table and let the Lord say, hey, for you, Emily, motherhood's actually going to come before marriage. Mm. And that felt out of order and weird. And why am I the oddball? I love my story now, but I had to leave some room for the Lord to make sense of all of that.
Wow.
For my sweet friend that I've been talking about, yeah, it was a biological kid, an adoption, and then he was happy to open her womb and give her another biological child. And so I've been thinking that of just like, is the Lord withholding something and that maybe feels hurtful or unloving or like God forgot you or skipped over you or is punishing you because there's just something else he doesn't want you to miss out on?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm kind of live on that, just spinning those wheels right now for some people I love and for myself.
Yeah, that's really, really, really good because we hear Psalm 84:11, like that no good thing does the Lord withhold from those who walk faithfully with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's interesting, because I think that is still true. I mean, not I think, it is still true. What's interesting is that like God was leading both of you to a good thing.
Yes.
And he was withholding something that was also good to lead you to good. And I think we just have this like, no, what I think is good. Therefore, if I don't have that, God isn't loving me. He is withholding from me. He is mad at me. There is something else I need to be doing to get this, what I want, what I think is good, what I'm holding on to is good. And God's like, just open your eyes. There's something else good for you.
Yes.
And I have it. It's right here.
Well, you know, the verse that talks about seek to understand. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think we often apply that to friends and boyfriends and conflict even. But there's a play in us to apply that to the Lord, to seek to understand him. And yeah, where is he in that? And where is he trying to take us in that? And then the other one, the other verse that talks about seek is like, seek first the kingdom of God. I was seeking first Emily's best plan A.
Yeah.
And pretty sure that meant I should get married and have kids.
Period, end of story.
Why would that not be plan A?
Yeah.
And period, end of story. And I put a very tight box around that. And man, I really needed to loosen the grip on it.
Wow. I'm so encouraged by your story because I think it's really cool too, Em, to see how like when you loosen that grip and you're like, hey, I am proceeding forward. Not only were you going home for holidays with this joy in your heart, I'm a mom and this was God's plan for me. I think there's something sweet to like having something that you wanted being a mom, but there's also something sweet when we say yes to God and the path is scary and it feels like terrifying and you want to back out and people are helping you stay in. But like, when you know, I have said yes to God, like I am walking in what he wants for me, whatever the journey has been, there is something light about that. There's something sweet that comes from knowing like I'm doing exactly what he has asked me to do and what he has called me to do. So like you're having that. So you're already like joyful in that. And I'm sure it's hard. Like, I'm sure there were so many challenges with that. But like, where was your head at after the first baby was brought to you after 2020 when you're like, okay, now I'm a mom.
Yep.
And were you still like, hey, I've given up completely on marriage? And where did Preston fit into that equation? Like, when did you guys meet? Yeah, when did he see you? He knows all this.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple of things. So had a newborn little baby girl, October 2020, and she ended up staying with me until she was 8 months old. So she left my home on May 20th. You hear people say, I could never do foster care. I could never give him back. I get it. It's a day of pure grief. That is all very true. It's also an awesome chance to meet a child that is just 8 months old dealing with hurt and pain. And if they can do it, you can do it. So I sat on my front porch grieving and crying. And she had spent days grieving and crying too as a little infant. And so there's a really sweet play in meeting children there, really, really little babies. But she left in May. I did take a couple months to grieve. And then the following October, exactly a year later, I was open again. And same exact thing. Friday night, little newborn baby girl straight from the hospital. She was 12 days old. Her name is Annie. And she was my second baby. And I do remember saying, of course, when you're a foster parent, one of the most common questions you get asked is, are you going to adopt her? Well, the answer is that's not up to me. Yeah. So that's never like you get to choose. The priority is to reunite them with their biological family. And so right when I got Annie, they had told me there's a plan for her to go home. And so we were always ready. I was always ready to send her home and had her bags packed from the time she arrived. That never ended up panning out. And I remember saying things like, oh, I don't want to adopt. I'm just here to do foster care. I'm single. Like, I would never adopt a child as a single woman. Like, who would go to daddy-daughter dances with her? Mm. Who would go to donuts with dad? And now I realize, gosh, what an ignorant thing to say. Mm. But I think that was just me being honest. That's what I thought at the time. Yeah. And it was okay to say that. But come July, so Annie was like almost a year old. After just back and forth with the courts, they did call and say, hey, this child will be adopted, and you obviously by you or by someone else, you just need to let us know. Well, I had gone on my first date with Preston in June, and so I told him on our first date, hey, I have a foster baby at home. And he goes, cool, and asked no further questions.
So he didn't know when he asked you on a date. How'd you guys get set? Did you guys get set up?
Good old Bumble.
Bumble. Okay, I love it. So yeah. So you guys met on Bumble.
Met on Bumble.
And there's no, like, you don't have kids in your bio. You guys met. And on first date, you tell him.
Yep. Okay, backstory. I had a friend that was going to speak at Region at Watermark. Regeneration.
Which is our recovery ministry at our church in Dallas.
Yep. She was going to speak on a Monday night. She was in my community group. And so I said, hey, can I run by Watermark at 4 o'clock, drop this baby off? Can you hold her in the lobby? I'm going to run to a date real quick. I was going to meet him at like 5.
Oh my gosh.
And then I had a hard stop at 6 because I was coming back to listen to her speak. And so I dropped the baby off with her, ran to a date. I told him I'd meet him for happy hour. We met at Hudson House, had a date. I wanted to make sure I said on that first date, I'm a foster parent. We laugh about it now. He's like, I didn't know what follow-up questions to ask to that. But he
was like, this is fine. It's great.
He goes, cool. He tells me now, he's like, I didn't know if that meant you had like a certificate on your wall from 10 years ago. Oh. If you like, I didn't offer anymore, but I just got it out there. On our second date, or maybe third, I said to him after we had dinner, hey, do you want to go back to my house and meet my foster child? And he goes, sure. He tells me now, he didn't know if we were going to walk upstairs and there was going to be like a teenager, a baby. He had a 10-year-old. He didn't know.
Because he didn't know what questions to ask. Yeah. And like, oh my gosh, this is good. I need to sip my, so he sip like, my dopio.
Yeah. He walked upstairs. I opened the door and there was a baby asleep in a crib. And he was like, oh, got it. A baby. She was 7 months old.
Wow.
And I said, that's Annie. She's my foster baby. And he goes, cool. I mean, he's a guy. Foster care is not something in his, he just was like, okay. And so obviously as we dated, she was in foster care. I did not have any intention of adopting her. That had never been on the table until it was. And so one day in like late July, early August, the court called and said she's going to be adopted. He's my boyfriend of like 2 or 3 months.
That's amazing.
It's not like he got a vote. So yeah. I'm like praying through this with my community group and my people. I'm not bringing him into that. I mean, he's been around for, I mean, we were moving very quickly and we had talked about marriage, but at the same time, he didn't get a vote in whether or not I was going to adopt this child. And he listened and we certainly talked about it. And I adopted her on September 30th and he was there and he sat in the back row of the courthouse and he watched me become mom permanently and have a daughter that would be with me for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And it was, it's obviously fun to look back at those pictures. And I love that he was there. His mom was there. His sister was there. He tells me now that I think he had bought a ring by that point and that he was very much on, you know, thinking through, hey, they are a package deal. If I marry Emily, she has a child. What will that look like? So, yeah, I mean, he got to consider all that. But I also knew, hey, he could be out. If he doesn't want it, if he doesn't want this, he could be out.
And I'm still going to say yes to like what.
Still going to say yes.
Yes. Yes. What God has for me.
The Lord only made that easier. That it might sound like I was still weighing that. But at the point, there was a child that needed a mom and it was an easy yes. And, you know, Preston was there. And yeah, if that had been a deal breaker, that would have been okay. But I did have to count the cost. And of course, in the Lord's sweet little way, he did end up choosing us together.
Yeah.
And we got engaged in November and then we got married the following January. And what's really sweet. So what's today? November 30th. In exactly a week, they will go to the courthouse and he will adopt her.
Oh my gosh. I'm crying.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so wild. Sweet.
Okay. But here's the part you need to hear. So singleness, whether we want to admit it or not, it makes us really selfish. When I talk about how I only saw the world through the lens of, I can't believe I'm single. This is so unloving, so unfair, so unkind. Christmas Eve is so hard when you're single. It does that. What I didn't realize that's just now coming into focus, so this is real time, is I was praying and being obedient to things that would affect other people. It was not ever about me. So back to that verse in Ephesians, the Lord saw Preston as Annie's dad from the moment she was conceived. I had to say yes to some things so that he could become her dad. Is that wild?
Wow.
Like it wasn't about me adopting Annie.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, Emily, you have to be faithful and you have to see what I've gone before and what the works I've laid out for you to walk in so that Preston can be her dad. I have adoption for Preston too. But,
wow.
But you got to go first. And that's probably been the most fun part. My sweet brother in Charlotte, he's got kids. They have learned about foster care and learned about adoption through my story. So like my yes and my obedience and my faithfulness, it wasn't ever really about me. He wanted my brother to have a sweet affection for these two kids in his son's class that were in foster care and to invest in them because he was like, I have a sister that does foster care.
Wow.
Right? So that's been a fun part about it is like being single is just not about you.
I'm literally like, I'm shook right now.
Isn't that crazy?
I'm really shook because there is like so much to the picture. And I think your story, like think of how many pieces that you still don't know, you yes. know? And I think that's like, that's how God works in general. And it's like, there's so many pieces going on at one moment, you know, for future moments.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the reality is, like, if you had known that this was going to be the story 10 years ago, mm-hmm. would you still have said yes to God? And it's like, yeah. And I would have done it way more joyfully.
Yes.
You're like,
Have you ever set anyone up?
Yeah.
Has it worked out? They got married?
Yeah.
Okay. Me too. I think my friend Will and Nicole, I set them up. They got married like 3 weeks ago. It's like the best, right?
It's amazing.
Do you not just feel like...
I feel so proud.
I did that.
Yeah, 100%. So, I feel completely responsible, yes. And I love setting people up.
Man, it's one of my proudest moments.
Yeah.
But we've obviously been talking a lot about adoption since it's next week. And the other night, Preston was having a sweet moment with Annie at dinner, and he kind of, for lack of a better term, like proposed to her. Like, Annie, can I adopt you and
oh my be gosh, your, you know, I'm and she's so dead.
Yes, adopt me, daddy.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It was precious. But I'm watching that going, this is the best setup of all time. This is like, I can't point to anything else other than like, had I not met you, Annie, had I not met Preston, I could have never set y'all up.
Wow.
And it just feels like, oh man, I wish I'd lived so surrendered to the Lord all of the days of my life. And I just didn't. Hopefully I got it right a couple of times And I do think there were some sweet moments of surrender where the Lord did get my best yes with a lot of help from people pointing me back towards him. But in moments like that, it comes into clarity for sure. And I just sat at the dinner table watching the two of them thinking, I'm so glad that this is all panning out. And to realize I didn't make it happen, but I had a role in it.
Yeah.
I had a role. And I'm so thankful that I didn't miss it.
That's so good. I think our question to everybody listening to this is like, what is the role that God wants you to play that you might like kind of know, but you've been pushing down because it doesn't make sense, or you've been setting aside because it's not what you want, or you've been ignoring because you think it's going to push you further away from something else that you want. I think there is something really sweet to just stopping and asking God, like, hey, what are the good works that you've prepared in advance for me to do? What is my path that you have chosen for me to walk down? And this is not like a, hey, you're going to get it right, you're going to get it wrong. Like, be overly focused and anxious that you're not on God's path. Like, go back and listen to our episode of Can I Mess Up God's Plan for My Life? That is not what I'm saying. But I think for some of you, like, you know who you are. Listening to this, there might be something that you're like, hey, I need to stop holding on to this because it's interfering with my ability to see that God wants that.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, maybe saying, what has he gone before and planned out for me? And then asking yourself, and do I think it has to happen in a particular order?
It's good.
And how can I loosen my grip on that? And yeah, just like, what would he have me say yes to?
It's good.
And I mean, quite frankly, I just don't know anyone that fostered kids or adopted kids before they got married. It wasn't on my radar.
Yeah.
And so had it not been for the Lord, that just wasn't an option on my table. But there's a lot of freedom that comes with just kind of being honest with those questions. And maybe the prayer is just like, okay, God, help me see, what am I asking you for? Do I have an out of order mentality about it?
Yeah.
And have I bargained with you on it? And hey, okay, now you've answered those questions. Can you help me make sense of this? Can you help me to see how my bargaining and my out of order mindset and this thing I'm praying for and how I think it all has to go, can you just like help me make sense of that?
Yeah.
And to let him go, yes, I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
Now that doesn't mean you're going to get married tomorrow.
Yeah.
Which is like, all right, well, but like, at least let's get some balls rolling. Let's like go forward.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. Oh my gosh. I love it. Emily, this is so encouraging. I know. I mean, I've like straight up gone to church in this episode, like hearing from you. And I know that like all of it is glory to God. I know all of it is the credit to God. And I'm really, really thankful that I get to sit with you and like remember back on seasons of our life that felt we're both sad in singleness and in different ways and different stages. And God's goodness was still on us then. And we were sharing the gospel on planes and we were making disciples and we were getting the opportunities to sit with guys saying, hey, I don't want to marry an older girl, and getting to like think and pray for them. And there was so much that God had his hand on, which is annoying to hear from a married person. But we're saying this from people who have been sad in singleness. There was so much that God had his hand on that was purposeful, was strategic, was intentional. And it's really cool to be sitting in the downline of some of the things that happened during those days to like leading up to now. Here we are. And there's so much more of your story that is still, God has already gone before and already written it. And there are more works.
Yeah. It's crazy to think. And here's what's crazy is like, I just want to admit, it's so easy to talk about it now. Like I hear that and I want to acknowledge that. And just, oh, it's so easy. It's like, oh, now you're the married girl. You got the end of the story. Like the last chapter is beautiful, of course, you know. And so I get that. And I feel like that, quite honestly. I don't want to shy away from that.
No, that's good.
I read this quote the other day that said, we have this unique perspective, this side of eternity, to get to choose to praise God in the midst of our pain and suffering. We cannot do that in heaven. We will not. We will no longer have the choice. The scriptures promise us that every tear is wiped away.
Yeah.
So we get to choose, like, do we want to take that unique opportunity to choose to worship the Lord in the midst of tears and pain and suffering that we are being given? And perhaps that tears and pain and suffering is all related to singleness right now. And if it is, that's okay. It's a valid reason to be sad. But we do get the unique choice to choose to worship the King of Kings in the midst of it. And we will lose that privilege the minute we cross over into eternity, which is wild.
Wow, that's so good. Oh, I love it. And thank you for all the wisdom. Thank you for sharing your heart and sharing your story. We love you. If you guys, I mean, where can people find you if they like?
Oh my gosh, I'm bad at social media, but if something did resonate, or we can chat. I mean, an email. I am on Instagram. It's Emily. What am I? Emily Utz Smith or Emily Ann?
I'm not sure, but you guys can DM, call her Holly.
Yeah.
Or me, Laura K. Eldridge, and I'll hook you up with Emily. I've done it before.
Yeah. Let's
I have another chat. Friend who fostered, and now she's dating someone, and so she's had a couple different fosters that I've gotten to connect you with. But anyways, for any other reason, if you want to connect with Em, she'd be happy to talk with you guys. And we love you so much, Emily. Thank you. You are a gift.
Thank you, Laura. Okay. Great to see you.
All right, people. As always, DM us if you need anything. Hit us up on Venmo if you want to support the mission at Call Her Holy. We love you. We are grateful for you, and we will see you next week. Don't wanna-